can you be Prime Minister if you've done Class A drugs? The Tory leadership hopeful Michael Gove has admitted he was fortunate to avoid prison after using cocaine several times 20 years ago. He has apologised for it. He said, "I deeply regret the mistake I made." Michael Gove was speaking to Andrew Moore.
"It was a crime. It was a mistake. I deeply regret it."
"Should you have gone to prison?"
Well, I was fortunate in that I didn't, but I do think that it was a profound mistake, and I've seen the damage that drugs do. I've seen it close up, and I've also seen it in the work that I've done as a politician. Mm-hmm. And that's why I deeply regret the mistake that I made.
How many times did you take cocaine?
I took it several occasions, on social occasions, more than 20 years ago when I was working as a journalist.
Was it a habit?
No, I don't believe it was. It was a mistake, and it was a mistake that I deeply regret. Mm-hmm.
You were looking at the dates. You were about 30 at the time. You weren't a young man. You weren't a teenager. Did you have any sense then of the damage that this was doing to other kids on the streets of London, many of whom may be in prison right now?
I do have a profound sense of regret about it all. And I am very, very aware of the damage that drugs do. As you know, Andrew, I was Justice Secretary. During that time, one of the things I said is that people should never be defined by the worst decision that they made. People should be given a chance to redeem themselves and to change. And I introduced efforts to have problem-solving courts so that individuals who may have used drugs had the opportunity to change their lives, to make a contribution. And I'm very, very conscious of the fact that the mistake that I made is not a mistake I would want anyone else to make.
Isn't it interesting that he's calling it a mistake? It's a crime, is it not? Former Conservative MP Edwina Curry, former Conservative Minister. Good morning, Edwina.
Good morning. Good morning,
we're talking too often. People will begin to talk about us. Mm. And the commentator and Conservative Party member, Erwin Armstrong. Morning, Erwin.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning, Edwina.
So Edwina, should that rule him out of being able to be our next Prime Minister?
Well, do you know what? At the first time this was published, the first time it was talked about, my feeling was that you know, anyone can make a mistake, and that what happened 20 years ago should not affect somebody's activities and career now. And my husband across the table from me, who is A, older, also a Conservative Party member, and B, a former police officer, he immediately said, no, this rules him out. This rules him out. Remember that the membership of the Conservative Party out there in the country are older. They are conservative in many of their views, and they really don't like the idea that somebody was writing articles about how you should not be taking drugs at the same time as taking them. This is actually not a really very good manifesto for him, not at all.
Erwin?
I in no way condone the taking of illegal drugs. I can't understand that younger people in their teens or early 20s, due to peer pressure or social pressure, may do so. What we're talking about here is not some juvenile. We're talking about a man who was in his 30s taking cocaine. And that, in my mind, brings his judgment into a very serious question. The fact that he was quite happy to break the law and use cocaine, which, as we all know, a lot of it comes from Colombia. We know the deaths and the murders that go on there. So he's supporting a chain. If he was to be in the final two, would not be voting for him.
That's a very important point. Syed Javid, Home Secretary, made a very interesting comment yesterday. And you said anyone that takes Class A drugs needs to think about that supply chain that comes, let's say, from Colombia to Chelsea and the number of lives that are destroyed along the way. People should be thinking about the impact they're having on others. Now, again, I can accept that somebody might do something stupid once, but you do it several times.
Is your chihuahua barking?
Little terrier. You ever come to our house and we'll set the two of them on you, believe me. if you're doing it several times and it's happening in your flat and you have a choice about it, these are, you know, you use the term drug-fueled parties, but there are drugs around in your house at that time. And certainly in the 80s, you could say very, very clear, I'm not having this. I really am not having this. It might have happened perhaps in the 60s, at the time of Tune In and Drop Out and all the rest of it. But No, by the time they're into the 80s, we've had campaigns against it. I can't see him continuing much beyond this week. The list closed tonight, I believe at 5 o'clock, and he will be in it. Nobody seems to have withdrawn from that yet, but he could well find himself way down at the bottom of the list and drop out by the end of the week.
Let's talk, though, about why should it rule someone out if Irwin... It was something they did 20 years ago. They are repentant. They say it was a mistake. Can people not change?
I think, as I said earlier, had he been a teenager or early 20s or at university or education, then you could say, OK, he was young, inexperienced, but and maybe a little immature. That's not what we're talking about here. We are talking about a Class A drug in your 30s, and that is a very different matter. And it has, Stephen, to bring into question your judgment that you do those things. Did he think he was above the law? Is being a journalist any different? You know, would you be excused because you're a journalist if you broke the law? The answer is no, you wouldn't.
Or you shouldn't.
Yeah. I think that's the point. And you know, this I was a journalist attitude. Now I'm a politician, I'm a different person. I don't believe he is a different person. I think we saw enough of his actions back in the previous leader, where he was quite happy to stab his close friend Boris in the back at the last minute so he could advance himself. He failed in doing that. So I just have serious questions over his judgment and his character.
It'll be interesting to see how the others pan out as well. Amber Rudd has just thrown her weight behind Jeremy Hunt, which is a blow to Johnson's campaign. I mean, I've often said that in these sort of contests, especially when everybody is very much on public show as they are, at every aspect of what they've been up to is under scrutiny. What you then find, of course, is that some people who are right at the front runners, as both Boris Johnson and Michael Gove have been, the front runners actually fall by the wayside. It's often somebody further down the list that comes through, somebody who hasn't blotted their copybook, somebody that hasn't made lots of enemies, somebody perhaps who's much less experienced, quite simply because then you haven't had the opportunity to make so many enemies. And in my view, it's going to be somebody a little bit further down the list. Maybe not publicly well known right now, but they will become well known as soon as they become a front runner.
Here's Brian in West Belfast, 030 30 80 55 55. Morning, Brian.
Good morning, Stephen. Drugs, I mean, it's very irrelevant, Stephen, because I mean, he was experimenting. But my point being is,
well, he was experimenting on a number of occasions then.
Yeah, but what I'm
in his 30s.
What I'm getting at is, well, he was completely against the Good Friday Agreement. He wrote an article about it at the time. He went against every leader in the world who were here negotiating it.
Did he? I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, tack on it, Steve. To me, that's more important. I mean, he was completely against... I can't remember the whole, what I said in the whole article, but it was on the news the other night. There he was being interviewed. And, you know, how can he represent Northern Ireland? Ever becomes prime minister, you know. I mean, all the negotiations, and plus the fact too, he's in the same court as the UP then, because they were against it at the very outset.
I didn't know Gove was against it.
I've just looked it up. He wrote a pamphlet in the year 2000 called Northern Ireland, The Price of Peace, in which he compared the agreement to the appeasement of the Nazis in the 1930s and the condoning of the desires of paedophiles. Oh, my goodness.
Really? We should get that pamphlet and look at it. Interesting. Let's get that Let's get it now.
Mm-hmm. Brendan O'Leary has dug it out. A professor of political science at the university.
He compared the Good Friday Agreement to what?
It's a pamphlet that he wrote in 2000 called Northern Ireland, The Price of Peace, in which he compared the agreement to the appeasement of the Nazis in the 1930s.
That's what Dick was saying.
And the condoning of the desires of paedophiles. Goodness me, I think we should get this up and have a look at it. It was published by the Centre for Policy Studies, and he described the agreement as a Trojan horse.
And that's Savannah's going to be Prime Minister?
Well, he wants to be prime minister.
Well, you know.
Bear in mind, back in the late 90s, 1999, 2000, we had a Labour government. There can be an easy knee-jerk reaction to say that whatever the opposition that is doing is wrong. You want a more nuanced and more thoughtful response to it.
Correct.
But we will see. We will see. My goodness, I have to say, well done to the people who've dug this out. And it does. What we shouldn't assume from this, of course, is that that is still his position on Northern Ireland, nearly 20 years on. Like his position on cocaine, it probably has changed somewhat. My goodness me.
You didn't have to move my car, but I hope you investigate it more, Stephen.
No, we will. Look, you've brought us a really interesting talking point this morning, so we'll try to do it before the end of the programme, Brian. John, morning, okay. John.
Thanks, Stephen. Bye.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, John.
Did Michael Gove become Prime Minister? Well, I think the simple answer to that is no, he should not. And the reasons being are that if I, myself, or any other working man was caught with a Class A drug, he would go to court, get punished, and his job prospects would hit their floor after that. So why should Michael Gove be any different? You know, and there's another wee thing I've just come to mind there. You know, they have drug tests in all professions, sport and such like. You know, and these people are just sports people and working in other firms. House of Commons, they're running the country, so maybe drug tests of some of the politicians we have maybe would not be a bad idea.
Wonder how many people they would catch, Erwin, if they were drug testing the House of Commons.
Yeah, well, but we don't know, sir.
Erwin?
Sorry, the honest answer is I don't know. In the time I spent around London in conservative circles, I didn't see any evidence among senior people in the party of any drug checking. Maybe alcohol, yes, but drug checking, no. I did not come across it. But I think it's unlikely that people who have reached the sort of average age of a politician, which is probably 50s or late 40s, 50s, 60s, are going to be drug takers in any event.
Well, you would know the House of Commons more than Erwin or I. If there were random drug tests in the House of Commons, do you think they would scoop a few people?
They might, but it's more likely these days, I think, to be cannabis. Alcohol, plenty of alcohol. I remember protesting once. There were 26 bars and restaurants all around the House of Commons and the House of Lords, around the Palace of Westminster. And particularly when you're waiting to vote at 10 o'clock in the evening, a number of colleagues would be quite inebriated. There were actually incidents when they came into the chamber and spoke when they were quite far gone. And it could be entertaining. It was regarded as not serious, even though, obviously, if your judgment is impaired by any kind of drug, yeah, it is, and your health as well. They used to smoke in the Commons. My goodness, you'd sit there next to somebody puffing away. Heavens above.
Here's Stephen in Antrim. Morning, Stephen.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Stephen. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's important that we focus on the individual that's controlling this story. One, Michael Gove. After all, he seems to have had a 20-year memory lapse about his cocaine use. But it shouldn't be considered unusual. You know, Michael Gove, when he was Education Secretary, made a claim that Antonio Gramsci was one of his two most influencing individuals. The other, of course, was Jade Goody. But Gramsci is famous for writing some journalism, we'll call it that, towards the Communist International. So I think it's important to think of Michael Gove as a journalist who wants to become the Prime Minister, who's had a very lengthy lapse in his memory.
Stephen, thank you. There's another contribution I'd like to make to this, Edwina and Erwin. I'm currently making a series in Hyde Bank in Northern Ireland. Hyde Bank is a young offender centre for young prisoners. And the amount of serious crimes that I'm coming across up there, people who have committed serious crimes, one-off crimes, because they were off their head on drugs, to the extent that they didn't even really remember what they'd done. until they were in a police custody suite. And I'm talking about people who have taken lives, who have destroyed their own. One night on drugs, and that's what it can do, Edwina.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what we shouldn't forget in the middle of all of this, when Michael Gove is calling it a mistake. Drugs destroy people.
And I think, Stephen, you're talking about the very serious end, you know, where people are dying or being seriously injured. But the amount of crime and burglaries there are with people who are just trying to get money to feed their habit. And I think it's one of the serious problems we have in Northern Ireland. We do not nearly have sufficient resource to help people get away from drugs. You know, we should try and stop them starting drugs, but once they're on drugs, we just don't have the resource to get them off drugs. And
I really got Edwina, my eyes opened though when I saw that, you know, we know that drugs can distort memory. We know that it can distort your senses. But when you come face to face with people who are doing lengthy times in prison, and you think of their victims and you think of them.
Yes.
And their lives are, you know, very much affected by taking a drug one night. And that's it.
Well,
they lose control.
Yeah, I think you're narrowing it down in quite a way. Let me say, first of all, I've never touched anything. I never dared. Never touched anything, never wanted to, and kept away from people who did. And it, as far as I'm concerned, it's not a way forward. You're given your brains and you should never mess with them. But if somebody is in jail for a long time, they are probably there either because they have been caught dealing, which means that they are messing with other people's heads, or they have done something really savage while they have been under the influence of drugs. And we tend to use the drugs as an excuse, as a way of saying, well, this is more likely to happen.
I'm not suggesting it's an excuse, but it is a factor that drives these people.
It's not a factor that drives them. If you beat up your partner, if you murder your mother, even under the influence of drugs, that makes it worse, not better. And to my mind, we occasionally use drugs as a kind of excuse. We tend to see them as explaining why you've lost control and that you would otherwise be a responsible person and that you would have found other ways of resolving your issues. And I suspect that's not true. I'm entirely with you. Entirely with you, Stephen, that we should have an attitude that is not tolerant of drug taking, but that looks at the drug taker and wonders what else is going on.
Okay. Edwina and Erwin, thank you very much indeed.